Hey, everybody. Fantastic episode of the show today. We are joined by Giancarlo Sho, also known as Giancarlo Buys Tokens from YouTube. Definitely check out his YouTube channel and his platform, Minter Skip. We talk about what the biggest things were that he was paying attention to in the NFT space in 2023 and what he expects out of the NFT space for 2024. We do a bunch of predictions, including price action predictions, and really dig into the way that he thinks about the NFT space. Beyond that, we talk about crypto price action with EZ and other crypto-related takes. Want to take a quick second to shout out the partner of today's show, Seedify. Seedify is a Web3 gaming launchpad and incubator. Check out Seedify on X, at Seedify Fund, at SEEDIFYFUND, and hope you enjoy the show. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thursday, December 28th. You have tuned into the NFT Morning Show. We run this Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time each and every week. Have been doing it for 2+ years. And today we are going to be discussing the Ethereum Revenge Rally and whether it can continue to run. We'll then be joined by Giancarlo of the very, very popular YouTube channel, Giancarlo Buys Tokens. We are a big fan, or we're big fans of Giancarlo. Pumped to have him on the show yet again. This is his third or fourth time coming on the show. He's going to join halfway through, and we are going to review 2023 as it relates to NFTs and make some predictions for 2024. Wanted to take a quick moment to shout out the partner for today's show. New partner, ladies and gentlemen, Seedify. So Seedify is a Web3 gaming launchpad and incubator, and it's known for having some of the highest ROI launches in the industry. So the first ever community round for Seedify holders actually started this morning, allowing them to participate in buying the Farcana token, F-A-R-C-A-N-A, Farcana token. Easy. Any other detail people should know about Seedify?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different things here. So they did also just announce their IGO, which is going on. They've done IGO rounds above 2 million and more. And they've just rolled out yesterday, I believe. I want to find this tweet real quick because it's rather interesting of all the different initial game offerings that they have. So even off the back of this, they mentioned, I want to say 8 or 9 games that are still yet to launch. And we've seen some wild success from these games. Farcana, for example, was a free mint that ended up going to 1.8 ETH on Polygon. And they have additional games on multiple chains. So you're not really just siloed into one vertical, one blockchain, etc. But they're working with a ton of quality games where the gameplay is live already. So personally, I'm really excited about Bloodloop and Amalia Games just launched. We have Haven's Compass coming up. And just a lot of different style of gameplays, from tactical fighting games to strategy games to first-person shooters. And it seems like they're continuing to grow the entirety of the Web3 gaming vertical, where they keep getting good quality projects and getting some engagement from that and getting some user gameplay that's going to be going live. A lot of these have predetermined tournaments already. It's just awesome to see, and they're incubating a ton of quality right now, which is what the market really needs.
Well, absolutely love to hear it. To learn more about Seedify, ladies and gentlemen, and keep up to date with their upcoming launches, follow them on X platform. It's at Seedify Fund, at SEEDIFY Fund. You'll be hearing more about Seedify coming up in the coming weeks and months. Anyway, why don't we just kick things off and just start cooking right off the bat? We have a guest today, so I want to get into it. Signal, can you please let us know what's going on with the weather?
Absolutely. 4 days to the end of the year, guys. So let's get cooking. That market volume, it's coming in at almost 25 million. That has been the highest in over 2 weeks. You got Blur almost at 20, OpenSea almost at 4, and Solana at 10 million. If you look at the market leaders, some of the top movers, you got Pudgies, they're back up to almost 11 ETH. Jiggle, that's up 100%. To 0.4 ETH. Sproto Gremlins, that's up to 0.65. But for Ghana, Nick obviously marked the top. That is down 50% to 8 SOL. Over the past 24 hours, the top four big stories. Number one, obviously, Ethereum's revenge pump has finally begun, with ETH seeing a 5% pump, crossing 2,400 for the first time in 2023. I feel like we should have the yay sound effect PO there, but it's marking a year-to-date high. It's gaining momentum against Bitcoin and Solana as Bitcoin held steady. And Solana seeing that pullback, about 7% dip, as the All-In's Jason Calacanis continues to question its 48, 46 billion market cap. On to the second story of the day. It's Frank from DGods. He seems to be copying his playbook from March as he went on a Solana NFT shopping spree. He bought 15 different collections and racked up impressions and followers from each, as many speculate that the DGods and Ute optional bridge back to Solana is inevitable. DGods holding a 3.1 ETH floor and Ute at 0.5. Onto the third story, Jigger has been the winner of the day as the anime-esque ETH collection saw a 2x to 0.4 ETH following huge sweeps from Free Lunch Capital, who now owns a whopping 14% of the collection. He stated wanting Flooring Protocol to be the main marketplace of this collection and will supply resources to improve its liquidity and other properties as an asset. And then lastly, two crypto organizations celebrated milestones. First Blast announced it has over 1.1 billion in total value locked. That's just Pac-Man telling his investors to hold my beer, and now has over 85,000 contributors. And the Sol NFT marketplace Tensor celebrated over 1 billion in trading volume. That is all for the weather report. It is back to you folks in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual. Signal some updates from the Nifty Daily Digest. The Nifty Daily Digest is posted to X platform every morning. It's pinned up top during the show, and it's emailed to anyone that subscribes at thenifty.com. So make sure you subscribe at thenifty.com. First story, a Boogle number 9 sold for 2,500 SOL. You see the sort of NFT Illuminati, or I guess the cabal, as we're calling them, have interest in Boogles. 2,500 SOL is a no-joke sale, so crazy to see that. Grapecoin saw a 60% recovery to 10 cents. Very interesting to see the volatility of Grapecoin since its launch. It is back up to 10 cents. So look, we are going to get to Giancarlo in the next 20 minutes, but we got a few things to cover. First, this Ethereum pump. So look, we've been talking about this. We've been saying on this show, or at least I have, that I fully expected some sort of price appreciation for Ethereum. I also expected the pump to not be that big, but for the kind of NFT Twitter and Ethereum Twitter people to really celebrate it as if it was significant. I feel like we kind of got both those things. Easy, what did you make of the price action on Ethereum?
The top's in, Pio. We're going to pull back here. The second ETH pumps, the cycle's over. We're going back to single digits on everything. The market's done. It was a fun ride while we had it. No, but seriously, it was lagging. Very difficult for the ETH individuals who basically celebrated like they won the Super Bowl on a 3% move yesterday. I was like, wow, yeah, no, this is great. Woo. Like, woo, this is awesome. But somehow we saw a little bit of a nice NFT appreciation too on some collections yesterday with the 3% move. Bitcoin holding over a key level of resistance, which is the main thing that I wanted to see. Of course, Solamos and AVAX down terribly. But personally, I'm kind of happy about it because now I can buy more for less, especially after that really aggressive rally. But I think right now, too, like the narrative that's being drawn up is that we are seeing Bitcoin ETF, and many people are like, okay, that means ETH ETF is next. And now finally that narrative is starting to really take shape. And I think a lot of people were like hating on ETH, and that's usually a great time to buy when the entire market despises something. So it turns out that it was probably the best time to rotate some capital from the Solana manlets, who were a little too euphoric, into ETH and let it keep working if you wanted to take that swing.
Yeah, and to quote Mike Alfred came out, he was on Scott Melker's podcast the other day, and he clarified that he does believe that Solana will go to 500 to 1,000 or more, but he also cleared up that he does not like Solana bro euphoria, to which, you know, we respond, who does? But yeah, it was definitely interesting.
I love it.
It was interesting to hear his thoughts on that. Solana right now under $100 per coin. Very interesting. Pretty awesome that you get to buy Solana for under $100. I do think it's funny that the celebration for ETH's negligible price appreciation is presented, like you said, like people won the Super Bowl. Signal, what did you make of the small run on ETH, and did you pay attention to the NFT action that came with it?
No, I didn't pay any attention to it, to be honest. For me, ETH is just a long hold here. It's just hold it and just I was actually thinking the opposite to yesterday. I was talking to an IRL friend about what happens if the ETF is not approved, right? Because everyone has been saying January, the 8th of Jan, but you've got to kind of run a scenario in your head of what happens if it isn't approved on the 8th. Well, in that case, we probably sell off a bit, but then we'll just roll the date, I imagine, and they'll say it'll be another date in January, it'll be the end of Q1. So I feel like there's still potential that we could sell off if it doesn't happen, but not hard. We chop for probably a while, and then there'll just be another date. But it just kind of puts us in this range. I don't know. The timeline at the moment seems just like a little bit too a little bit too euphoric, a little bit too early. I just feel like everything is pending on this ETF decision, but be prepared for both ways. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't go through, because I think it'll just get pushed down. It'll get pushed to March, right?
Yeah, March, which is a little bit of time. And I think that would cause some gnarly price action to the downside, because so many people are like dead set on this January approval. And if that doesn't happen and you have 3 months, then I think we actually see like a pretty aggressive pullback, which is something a lot of people have been kind of asking for, is like, when you're running this hot, Solana up 15% on the 7 day, ETH up 7% on the 7 day, you almost want to expect the same level of like a 20% drawdown at some point over 7 days, something aggressive. I mean, we're down 20% on Sol in 48 hours, which is like not unheard of.
Yeah,
but just put you back in accumulation, right? I would just be acute. Like if we sell off in Jan, I'm just going to continue to accumulate harder. Like if we sell off 20%, I'm just going in harder, because that ETF approval will go through, I think, sometime in 2024. I don't see how the SEC can halt this train anymore.
I agree.
But yeah. Now we got a couple comments here I want to address here. We got a Jose Maddox O. I don't know how to pronounce that, amigo. But anyway, Jose said, we are pending the interest rates being cut, not the ETF. Come on, you know this. I disagree on the ETF front. If you want to look at the S&P 500, the S&P 500 flirting with its all-time high right now. I totally agree with you on that, Jose. Is that the market pricing in next year's interest rate cuts that are absolutely expected at this point? However, the absolute cook that has been the cryptocurrency market, you know, broadly speaking, look at Bitcoin, 16K bottom, now trading north of $42,000. Look at Coinbase stock, look at MicroStrategy stock, look at the action on the Bitcoin miners. Iris Energy up 2x in the past 45 days. A lot going on in the market for crypto. People are expecting an ETF approval in January, or the market's kind of pricing that in. If it doesn't happen in January, I agree that we see a pullback. I wouldn't be surprised if BlackRock wants that, ladies and gentlemen, to be able to accumulate more Bitcoin at a cheaper price ahead of the product actually being in market. Next story that we're going to talk about, Frank's Solana shopping spree, running back the playbook that he implemented when he bridged to Ethereum. When he bridged to Ethereum, if you all remember, he bought a Bored Ape. I don't remember what else he bought. Easy. I don't know if you remember anything off the top of your head.
Azuki, a Bored Ape, bought him a lady for about like 45 minutes. I'm trying to think what else. There's a couple other collections in there. Cryptoad. He bought a Cryptoad. Yeah, there's a few more, but I think those are kind of the main ones.
Yeah, he definitely bought a bunch of stuff, ran the playbook back on Solana. To me, this is a foregone conclusion that there will be in this open bridge between Ethereum and Solana. I would anticipate a significant percentage of DGods to bridge to Solana, and that to be the majority of the action. But then again, I could be completely wrong. I don't know what the Ethereum holder community of DGods actually looks like, and if they feel that Ethereum is a superior blockchain. I feel that gas fees alone would justify a move to Solana. Solana, I mean, at this point is literally a top five coin, which is incredible. And the user experience, I think many would argue, is very, very strong, especially for NFTs and trading shitcoins. Quick quote from Mike Alford that Clemente put into this call sheet. He was speculating on an incoming Bitcoin pump. He's expecting it because heavy algo activity after hours in the select group of Bitcoin miners he watches outside of regular market hours. Every time he's seen that action, it's had a perfect record, calling a big move up the following day. The big squeeze is already on, but we may see even more participation tomorrow. Obviously, short-term price predictions are tough. I was talking to a friend last night, Easy, about the possibility of Bitcoin doing something it's never done before. Last cycle, we saw it do something it had never done before, which was drop below the previous cycle all-time high. It dropped to 16K when the previous cycle all-time high was nearly 20K. Do you think that there's any possibility that we see an all-time high before the halving because of this ETF putting some gasoline on the Bitcoin fire? And that would be a first. Is that something that you could ever see happening easy?
100%. I don't see why not, to be honest. Like, I think the bigger thing here is like, what is the real reason why I couldn't see an all-time high? You know, like, I think that's where I'm most interested. I'm almost like, as I look at the market right now, why could a Bitcoin halving or an all-time high before halving be ruled out when the market is running exceptionally hot? And so many people are like fairly dead set on this idea that we're going to get all-time high after. Like, Max Payne is too many people being sidelined with cash, missing this rally, and it's a disbelief rally. Like, that's the thing. It's, I look at Bitcoin, it's what, like a 60% move to the upside gives us all-time high, something like that, 70%. It's, yeah, not like a crazy amount. And even with ETH here touching 27K, that's $1,300 to get to the upside of all-time high, which is crazy to me. Like, Sol's still 2.
You're talking about ETH to go to all-time high?
ETH and Bitcoin. Like, I think they're going to rally in unison if they do. Like, if Bitcoin goes all-time high, then I also think ETH will go all-time high, which will then open up alts to go to all-time high. So it's just kind of like a trickle-down effect for me, where I look at it and I'm like, this doesn't feel like it's totally unnecessary or like not possible. Like, I don't want to rule that out by any means, just purely off the back of the fact that it's like, as you look at this, that feels like Max Payne to me. Like, that truly feels like Max Payne is all these people sidelined and missing the move to all-time high.
And should be pointed out that Ethereum is actually 50% off all-time high. Don't forget how hard Ethereum has been lagging this cycle. Also, don't forget that Solana is way off its all-time high. Let me just make sure you understand that, ladies and gentlemen. It has more room to run. Very interesting stuff. Real quick, I want to call out Mav, OX Maverick. He's an advisor at Floor Protocol, and he's a co-founder of X Plus, which is the community of DGods holders that own more than 10, that is an exclusive group for sure. He said OG DGods holders are going to bridge back to Solana. I don't know any holders that came from Sol that trade on ETH. They all trade on Sol. So he shares my opinion that there will be a considerable amount of DGods bridging back to Solana. Real quick, we got All In Podcast Jason Calacanis saying, dude, I honestly love this guy now. I love this. I'm a big fan. Making crypto people mad is one of the best things you can do, I think, just in the world. Making crypto people mad is hilarious. Like, we do it on this show all the time. We literally make crypto people mad on this show all the time. And he's just doing what we do, but he's actually doing it at a bigger scale because he has a bigger following. He said, I keep asking folks for actual business or consumer applications that would justify Solana being worth $46 billion. No one can name a single one that has any scale. What are Solana's revenue or earnings? This isn't financial advice, but if the market cap is correct here, this is completely disconnected from reality. Solana isn't more valuable than, say, DoorDash, Palantir, or Spotify. I love this. I think Jason Calacanis trolling the entire crypto space, comparing Solana to an equity, comparing it to like a tech company, and saying that there's no real world use case is exactly how you piss off crypto people. And everybody knows that pissing off crypto people is hilarious. Signal, any thoughts on Jason Calacanis's commentary on Solana?
I think him and Mike Alfred have been my favorites over the weekend, just completely trolling people's bags. They're trying to psyop you into selling. Don't, just hold, okay? Like, the thing is, I understand why he's saying it, but he's a smart guy. Like, I just can't take him seriously when he says this kind of, like when he says this kind of stuff. I honestly think he's just sitting at home on his couch between this Christmas and New Year period and just trying to piss off people on X. I honestly think like that is it. There's nothing more to it.
Well, I agree with you. However, the asterisk I will put out there is I do not believe that he has deep conviction, quite frankly, even in Bitcoin. I've listened to that show. I used to listen to the show quite a bit. I can't I can't listen to it anymore. I'm out on the show. But I used to listen to it a lot. And when I used to listen to it a lot, it did not feel to me that him, or quite frankly, any of the other co-hosts of that show, especially Friedberg, had any deep conviction in any crypto asset. Chamath has a bunch of Bitcoin that he bought between $1 and $8, or I might be getting the number wrong. It's definitely around like $8 to $12 or something like that. And I don't know how much he still has, but I know that he had a ton of it and he used it to fund a bunch of companies. So he was early on Bitcoin, but I still don't detect the deep like Bitcoin maxi level conviction from him or anybody else. David Sacks infamously, you know, had a ton of Solana and sold it near the top, definitely over $200. But yeah, we'll have to see what the all-in crew ends up moving, like what their takes are on different cryptocurrencies moving forward. We got, ladies and gentlemen, Giancarlo Buys Tokens, Giancarlo Cho, joining the show in about 5 minutes. With him, we're going to be talking about the new genre within the crypto and NFT space, network goods. Really excited to talk about that. He's going to talk about enforced royalties. Don't cringe. It is going to be an interesting conversation because I'm trying to understand what different NFT projects are going to do with these legacy contracts that don't have royalties enforced, and you know, the impact that something like Blur can have. Real quick, speaking of Blur, Easy, would you buy Ronin token, AVAX, or would you stake Blur here?
Ooh, that's tough.
So first of all, I need some credit for hitting you and Kicks back-to-back days with hard versions of this. The point of this is that it's supposed to be hard, and it's supposed to make you really think. Ronin token, AVAX, or staked Blur? Let's go.
I'm going staked Blur.
Oh!
Yeah, I'm going staked Blur because it's a shorter-term trade. That's a big thing. Like, right now, if you stake Blur, the potential for the airdrop is more interesting to me than a longer-term trade with AVAX and RON. Big thing with AVAX and RON are those are, like, longer-term trades. So why not buy the staked Blur, stake it, get the airdrop, sell both, because you don't have... The Blur's not locked up. So, like, you can get points right now. Sell it before the snapshot is finalized. Still capitalize on potential upside move after any announcement comes out around it. And then move profits or capital into Ronin and AVAX. That feels like the most logical move for me. Like, stake, no one's talking about staking Blur right now. Nobody at all. Like,
yep.
So why would you not buy into a non-crowded trade when everyone's looking at alts and gaming tokens? Like, I'm still exceptionally bullish on Ronin. And I think that that's going to go $4 or $5 is kind of where my target is for that. But until then, why not try to maximize on your capital? And I think that's the best path forward. Get the airdrop, then utilize 50-50 and go into the AVAX and Ronin place.
So Ronin token right now is $2. Most people that buy it stake it. So if you accumulate a bunch of it, you're looking at a 2+X with a good staking protocol. Here's a follow-up, and then I want to hear Signal's take too. Coinbase stock, Dogecoin, or Pepe.
All right, get that. Oh, third
you did
one
say
out
Robin
here,
Hood.
Get that third one out of here, dude. Who's
fine? You're Pepe. Done with fine, I'm fine. Fine. Pepe, Lil Coinbase stock, Lil Pudgies, or
I like that better. But to be honest, probably Coinbase stock. Like, why would I not buy Coinbase stock? It feels like a leverage bet on the industry and the easiest path forward for retail to get any level of exposure and institutional capital to get levels of exposure. I ended up diving into a rabbit hole till like 2 a.m. last night, reading some threads from some people who were like, Coinbase stock is going to end up not trading even remotely near its valuation. It's going to be significantly higher because it's just the easiest way for people to get exposure. Like, that's it. Like, it's the easiest way for people who don't get crypto to see, oh, crypto company, I get crypto. Like, that's it. And if we continue to see all-time highs, I think that goes significantly higher, like to an uncomfortable level higher.
What is an uncomfortable price for Coinbase? $500. It's $185 right now. It was trading at $96 in the past 100 days. So it's up nearly 2x in the past 100 days. What's an unreasonably high, stupid number for Coinbase this cycle?
$500.
Yeah. Is that even that stupid? I get that, dude, all-time high?
It's traditional equities. Like, that's the thing that I look at. Like, traditional equities for me. Yeah. Oh, wow. So yeah, I didn't realize
all-time high 342.
So let's say 700 United States dollars.
Oh my God.
$2x over all-time highs, which will lead to them having to do a stock split and all that other shit. get it back down to $20 or something absurd, which it's just going to be one of those like euphoric moments. Like when you saw Tesla do its like giga send, dude, they split twice.
It's a 6X in less than a year.
They split twice.
I'm taking little putties on this. There's not enough. There's not enough leverage easy at this time round. There's not. I don't think we
not
like,
yet.
Not yet. Not yet. But I don't. That was stimulated by quantitative easing, where the government was just handing out money to everyone. Like, this is a different environment. I don't like. I'm bullish on Coinbase, but not those numbers. I would personally take the flip side of that and do little pudgies because I see it as an alt. I see it as an alt to Coinbase. And when Ethereum runs, the NFTs will run. And pudgies sitting. NFT Statistics just did his poll, and Pudgies was the number one PFP, I believe. Yeah. So I think Pudgies is the alt that will run way harder than Coinbase.
So check it out. A couple things on this. Well, first of all, I have a bunch of Pudgy Penguins and a bunch of Coinbase. So I'm heavily exposed to both. However, NFTs have this tremendous amount of risk, and Giancarlo is going to join us in 2 seconds. I'm just getting him on the Twitter stage. NFTs have a ton of risk. That also means that they can go up really high. So betting little pudgies, I think, is always an interesting bet, because when NFTs go stupid, which we're not even like in the discussion of them going stupid yet, the price can go really, really high. Having said that, I like what Easy's saying about Coinbase. One thing, when's the last time either of you checked the market cap of gold?
1996, maybe, when I was like 6 years old. I don't check gold. Rarely, if ever. I look at like the gold ETF approval chart more than I look at the gold price.
Okay. Well, anyway, the market cap of gold is now around $14 trillion. So it was at 10 for a long time, but they printed enough money. So now it's near 14. The market cap of silver is almost 1.5T. So gold and silver, you got $15.5 trillion market cap. Bitcoin is under $1 trillion market cap right now, okay? So basically, Bitcoin under $1 trillion market cap is free. But really, you can expect long-term that kind of, you know, the gap to narrow between gold, silver, and Bitcoin, or the combined gold and silver and Bitcoin. And to me, that's just going to pull everything up with it in a stupid way. It's not going to be a $14 trillion market cap this cycle for Bitcoin. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, these numbers can go berserk. So I almost wonder if $700 Coinbase is conservative. But Easy, are you going to stick with Coinbase over little pudgies? And what even 100%. Was the third thing I said? What was the third thing I said?
Coinbase, little pudgies.
You said Pepe, but then Easy said no Pepe.
No Pepe, but there was another thing.
I forgot Coinbase. What the third one was.
All right, I don't remember what the third one was.
Clearly, it didn't have any lasting impact. If we can't even remember what the hell it is.
Why can't I remember?
A mining stock. It has to be a mining
stock. No, it wasn't a mining stock. I don't think it was an equity.
The hell was it? What it was.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you remember what it was, write it in the YouTube comments. Dogecoin.
Shout out Leo. It was Doge. Yeah, I mean, dude, Doge has absolute giga send upside. But at the same time, like me with Coinbase here, is that my biggest concern is the small number fallacy, because people aren't going to want, like, retail won't want to buy it when it's $500. They'll want to buy it when it's $20.
Will they buy Robinhood then?
God, here it is.
Is that right,
I got to go.
Buy?
I got a conflict. I got to
jump. Where's Giancarlo?
I'm asking. Ladies and gentlemen, we are being joined by a very special guest. Love having this gentleman on the show. He's electric, reporting live from the northeast of the United States. We got Giancarlo Cho of the esteemed YouTube channel, Giancarlo Buys Tokens. This guy's a real pro. Giancarlo, what's going on, amigo?
Testing. Can you hear me?
Oh, you bet we can.
Hey, what did I walk into? Silver market cap, gold
Robin
market,
Hood stock, dude. A
hopium rant. I like it.
Well, we all know a thing or two about hopium here. I'd be curious, Giancarlo, what do you make of where we're at in this cycle, both from the crypto and NFT side? What are some of the key things you're looking at? You've been making some fire video content being posted directly to X. Absolutely love to see it, crushing it on X, getting a ton of impressions. What's going on in your world?
So on the crypto side, I basically stepped away from even trying to predict any of that stuff. This past year, I've just like gone into cocoon and have just stuck close to NFTs and sort of the creative level there. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're in a bullish uptrend, and you know, every individual chain that does well, that does flow into the NFTs a bit. But that's not really what I'm focused on. But on the NFT side, you know, there isn't as much to get excited about recently, just because there aren't that many creators coming into the space. But, you know, we might talk about predictions a little bit here, but one prediction I do have is that enforcement royalties are coming back.
Yep.
And that's going to be like, I think the biggest catalyst next year for NFTs. And that's going to bring back a lot of creators who, you know, it's just going to push them over the edge of like deciding to say yes to NFTs, because that changes the business model completely. And so that's really what we're missing right now, is just quality creators coming into the space, doing innovative things. And I think once we lost royalties over the past year, you know, a bunch of them just sort of, we're just happy staying where they were currently.
Well, you, for people that don't know, which I imagine most of our listeners do know who you are, but if they don't know, you have a YouTube channel called Giancarlo Buys Tokens. You also have a newsletter and, you know, web platform and community called Mint or Skip. So you follow the space closely. You write a lot. And in my opinion, if you write, then you know how to think. What is the most interesting thing to you that happened in 2023 in the NFT space?
There were positives and negatives. I mean, the most positive thing was probably ordinals. I mean, you can't really, like, that just overshadows everything, right? This is a year that, like, it wasn't the first time we had Bitcoin NFTs. I mean, if you remember Rare Pepes and all that, but this is the first time where it really hit in a big way, I think, with a big number of people. And over time, I just think more creators are gonna be launching things on ordinals. I think we're just in the beginning of like developing all of that. It's fucking Bitcoin NFTs. I'm like, every time I talk about it, I'm just like, How can I overstate how big this is? This is like the king chain. It's the most decentralized. It's
layer one Bitcoin.
Layer one Bitcoin, the most permanent. So that kind of just overshadowed everything. When we look back at like what happened in 2023. And then, you know, there were all these like creative moments with artists that, you know, did amazing things. Most artists that were already here from like 2021. So that sort of goes back to the point that there aren't that many new people coming in. And, you know, there were negatives as well. The profile pic genre, which was the biggest genre going into 2023, got decimated. All the, like, the so-called blue chips just got murdered. Moonbird, Suzuki, Doodles. So that kind of just went away. Then it was, like, all the blur wash trading and all of that just, and then the 0% royalty. So there were some negatives or positives. It also depends on, like, what you're here for. If you're here just for like the money side of things, which I think a lot of people are, then it was a shitty year, right? But if you were here for the creative side, I think there was a lot to still be excited about.
So you touched on a few things there. The three projects, Doodles, Moonbird, Suzuki, that you brought up at, you know, falling under the PFP genre and taking a big hit. I find those three examples interesting. I agree with you that those would represent the sort of the hit that the PFP genre took. If you look at the all-time high USD and Ethereum value of those three collections compared to where it's at now. But is that an issue with the broader NFT space and market, or are those localized issues to those three organizations because of execution?
I mean, I think both. I think, yeah, obviously they haven't really produced anything valuable that you want to write home about. But at the same time, there was like a across the board like drop in belief in just the idea of these like indie roadmap PFPs launched by founders that had never done the things that they're saying that they're going to do. Now losing like the only source of revenue that they had, which were royalties. And building for like trying to balance building for like the short term collectors of the PFPs versus like what a sustainable model kind of requires in terms of long term thinking. So the belief just kind of ran out the door, and then it's sort of like that Buffett quote is like, you know, when the tide goes out, you see who's naked, and like everyone was naked. Right? It was like a Beeple tweet at the end of the day. That's kind of what happened. And so now, like I said, there's still a lot of creativity, but that was like going into the year, that was like 80% of the volume was happening with PFPs, if not more. So that,
and I mean,
that's a big hit.
Well, sorry. And I was going to say PFP still consume, like a lot of the volume in NFTs goes to profile picture collections. Like if you're going to launch, let's say you are some business that's, you know, like, well, there's already one of these, but let's say it's like a legacy video game company that really wants to come into the NFT space and do it right. They're going to launch a PFP, mm-hmm. and that probably gives them the best chance to get real volume. They can launch it with an enforced royalties contract at this point. You touched on Blur. I think the narrative around Blur for the first like 6 to 9 months that it existed was that it was bad for the space because it took away royalties and incentivized wash trading because of the token airdrop. And I get why that narrative was brought up. Having said that, I also get that that was just it dropped during a bear period in the market, a long, you know, sustained bear market where prices of everything were going down. I don't necessarily think that Blur actually caused the prices to go down. I think it was just NFTs are the first to lose liquidity in a crypto cycle. And we, you know, finished a crypto cycle. So they lost liquidity right away and the prices went way down. And now if I look at Blur, I look at a company with a young, you know, kind of Zuckerberg-esque, like our version of Zuckerberg CEO. Obviously, it's a big name to kind of assign to him, but he's like an MIT dropout and Y Combinator alum and this, that, and the other thing. Building a marketplace that dethroned the number one consensus first mover marketplace in OpenSea. Everyone takes that for granted. Everyone's like, yeah, so like, what's the big deal? It's like a really big deal. If you told me 2 years ago someone was going to come and just shaft OpenSea, I'd be like, what the hell? And now they're building a layer two and doing all this very interesting stuff. What's your position on Blur and whether like it's good or bad for the NFT space? Like what is your late 2023, early 2024 take on Blur as a platform?
Yeah, it's a complicated one. From the economic side, I can see sort of people arguing both sides that they're just providing liquidity to just making the market more efficient. So how can that really be a bad thing? It's just the way things are. I think where it did cause a stir was from the perception side, where all of these NFTs, this is like, what are we doing here? It's a very intangible belief-based assets where people do need to have some sort of belief that these things are special, that they're almost like Veblen goods. So it's all intangible. And when you bring something like Blur in that creates this like aura that everything is actually fungible, that it all is just a number on the screen and it's just being traded back and forth, I think it does a lot of these assets lose that sort of special aura, that sentimental value that I think at the end of the day is like a big chunk of it. And so a lot of artists got just discouraged by that, where they're like, it's sort of like the curtain got opened up and there's like, holy shit, like what are we doing here? What is this space? And a lot of collectors also just, they just lost sort of maybe the love that they had for these assets. So from the economic side, I don't know if they did anything wrong, but from like the belief side, which is actually maybe a bigger part of the space, I think they just made everything a little more ugly, which—
Killed morale. Signal, you have a question for Giancarlo.
Yeah, Giancarlo, I wanted to ask, because you obviously have your eye on the market, especially with Mental Skip, and you mentioned earlier that the most interesting thing that's happened this year has been Ordinals. Aside from the Bitcoin narrative, what do you think is interesting that's happening there? And do you think it will be PFPs that will be the narrative for next year? Or do you think it'll be something else that you've seen that will take the hype over to that chain even more?
I think it should take more of the art market, especially like the static art market. So, nothing that has any sort of dynamic mechanics to it. It's just like the gold standard now, I think, for decentralized network and just permanent storage. So, I'm seeing some artists starting to launch on Solana when they just have like photography, for example. I don't really see the purpose of that versus like choosing Bitcoin. So far has been mainly, I guess like more on the degen side of the PFP genre that you've seen on Ordinals. I think that's just the nature of things. Whenever a new ecosystem opens up, the first group of people are the degens. We saw this on Solana in 2021 as well. And so that's just been like what we've seen so far. And I think that has created this reputation for why a reputation that has like caused artists to hesitate going into Bitcoin, because they're like, this is just degens and wash trading and a lot of scammy stuff. So from the creative standpoint, it actually wasn't a huge deal. I mean, there were some collections that were interesting, but really just from setting the foundation for what we might see in the future and this becoming maybe the luxury corner of the crypto space, which I think it's what they should, the narrative should be, this is luxury. Ethereum is like, I don't know, they have to find out their story. They're sort of in the middle. And then Solana is more like the dynamic, you know, cheaper stuff, you know, maybe more mass market.
Any follow-up, Sig?
No, that's good to hear, because I also agree with that narrative as well, that I would want to see. I remember there was Bugatti and Asprey when I don't know if they dropped it yet, but there was some kind of Fabergé egg NFT that was meant to drop on there. And I thought that would be the kind of luxury that we would see on that chain, not necessarily coming from brands, but just at that sort of scale. And I hope as well that what we see there is artists dropping their art on Ethereum and on Bitcoin as well. Sorry, on Ethereum and on Ordinals as well, because it feels like Solana is going for the mass market, which is fine because there's a lot of money in fast fashion. There's a ton of money in fast fashion, but it would be good to see that narrative become more bifurcated across the three blockchains.
And Easy, you have a question for Giancarlo.
Yeah, it's kind of around the same kind of topic, I guess. Like, we're asking here, like, where do you see these markets shaping up? But so far, with the NFT side of things, I've definitely been keeping tabs on a lot of it, but it seems like the big winners and runners right now are mostly gaming NFTs. And the ones that are free that typically have some level of token attached to it, like, you can almost call it a meta right now. I'm curious if you think that this meta kind of continues through whatever next cycle we have, or if you think it's going to be something totally different. Like, it's kind of a tough question, but I'm curious where you're starting to see the market trend, because we've kind of been stuck in this like token meta with meme coin, with grape coin, with some of these others. And now obviously Overworld announcing what they've got going on, Farcana dropping theirs. It's kind of propped up a lot of these NFTs just on the speculation aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can go on for a while. I think it, in a way, it's like an evolution of the profile pic meta, where you have like a team promising that they're building something out. You get like very select sneak peeks. Sometimes you don't get sneak peeks at all. Like sometimes these mints happen and you haven't even seen any gameplay yet. And that can go on for quite a bit. There's also like, a lot of these buyers don't really understand the games industry at all, so they don't know the scale and the difficulty of what these founders are promising, and also the how long the development cycles are for these games. And so, you know, somebody could be teasing a game for years, and theoretically it could be possible that this game is coming, but in the meantime, you know, they could be sort of just collecting royalties, teasing token airdrops. So I think there's a big base out there that will keep buying into them. It's less interesting to me, just because until I see actual gameplay, which is like very rare to see, like, you know, actual gameplay and gameplay that you find like enjoyable, then I think it's a lot of vaporware. I do cover gaming and I do look into it, but it is a lot of hype, and it does remind me a lot of like that early 2021 PFP era.
Yeah, and I guess just a follow up on that too is like, you've been following clearly the art side and think that art will have its place on Bitcoin. And you mentioned like ETH trying to find its narrative. I guess, like, what do you think that narrative could be? Because I've been in the same like sort of issue. I keep trying to figure out like, what is the purpose of launching something on ETH?
It's a good question. I mean, Ordinals, like I said, they could be the luxury corner of crypto, but they haven't really gone into that direction yet. It still is mostly just like meme cults and PFPs and things like that. So I don't know how long it's going to take for them to develop that narrative. So in the meantime, Ethereum is that like high culture luxury center where you do still get the top of the line generative art. You know, the biggest name creators still go to Ethereum. And so that's going to continue to be the case for, you know, through next year, I think. But over time, like over a period of like years, I think eventually Bitcoin will take more of that. And then there also is, you know, the smart contract side. So we still haven't really explored like all the design space in like all this kind of dynamic art and on-chain experiences. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And then Ethereum as like the high-end version of that is, you know, there's a lot of upside there that we haven't explored.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, and Giancarlo, I've seen you. I'm listening to you, and I'm seeing you focus a lot on the kind of fine art side. And you and I got into the NFT space around the same time. And at that time, early 2021, late 2020, a lot of focus was on art. NFTs were digital art, 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 art. You know, artists can mint their NFTs, and you can buy it, and they'll get royalties forever. I wonder, do you think that the art side long term will be as significant, you know, as we're kind of discussing now. The reason I ask is because, look, there's a natural illiquidity to art. Like a Picasso painting is not traded, you know, 100 times in a year. It might get traded, you know, 4 times over 100 years, you know, or maybe less, right? And obviously the high-end market for art has a tremendous amount of liquidity because one Basquiat painting can sell for $50 million or more. These things can go for over $100 million easily, and new records get set in the, you know, to the tune of $400 million on a near annual basis. So obviously I'm not denying the high-end market for art. However, I wonder, we don't have these numbers, or at least I don't have these numbers in front of me, but I'd wonder what like the daily volume on basketball cards is, or the daily volume on trading Pokemon cards, trading cards in general is, versus the daily volume for fine art. Because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of artists came into the NFT space at the very beginning when it was a brand new technology. It's a crypto technology, and there's a native trading and, you know, sort of a native set of liquidity to crypto. You know, it was never supposed to be easy to make a lot of money selling art. Like if you go to Cuba, there's artists on the street that are making brilliant work and they literally don't even have a roof over their heads, right? Mm-hmm. So selling art is insanely difficult. If it was easy, then all the talented artists in the NFT space and outside the NFT space would all be like billionaires, right? So it's really, really hard. And you see, even in the best of times, the liquidity on a Fidenza, for example, or a Ringer, it's not like 20 of those things are selling every day, and the supplies of those things can be really high. Do you really view the high-end art market as one of like the top 2 or 3 most important sectors of the NFT space long-term? You know, when collectibles are going to keep doing what they're doing and people like Luca Netz are going to build these brands that probably have TV shows and movies and toys in every major retailer. And then on the gaming side, you are eventually going to get really popular video games that have in-game assets. Do you think art is going to be able to keep up with that?
So the fine art side definitely has a ton of upside. I don't know compared to gaming is going to be obviously huge. Collectibles are going to be huge. So it's harder to know like 10 years from now, like what's the market share and the mix between that. But I also think like it's not just fine art, and we tend to focus on fine art because that's the kind of art that has done the best so far. And it's really just an evolution of like the physical art world, where in the physical art world, you know, an artist does a painting, it's a one of one. They don't make a ton of them throughout their lifetime. And so those, if it's a great artist, those end up getting like unfathomable amounts of money at auctions. And so there is going to be some of that, but on the blockchain, there's the ability to create obviously many more tokens. You don't need to be limited to just fine art, just like individual one of ones. And so really, I think if you expand your view, really what it is it's creators that have a vision, that have an intent to bring that vision into reality. And the vision is driven by, you know, hopefully motives that are not like super mundane. It's not just to make a quick buck, although, you know, there's no problem with that, but hopefully they're driven by something higher. And that vision, you know, can be materialized in any form of tokens. It doesn't have to be like a one of one or a limited collection. It could be a huge, it doesn't have to be either like hoity-toity generative art either. It could be a meme. It could be a crypto dig butt. So I don't know exactly like what form it's going to take, but I think that idea, and that's what I focus on a lot over the past year, and it's made my experience so much better in NFTs than it was like in 2021, where I was just like focused on like 80% just being the trade. I've seen a lot of people just burn out, you know, with that kind of mentality. And so now I'm sort of like inverted, where it's like 80% more of just like finding these creators who do have like some vision and they're trying to like enact that on the blockchain. And so that can take like a million forms. But that idea, I think, is going to be a pretty big deal. There's also like this other thing that maybe we'll talk about in a bit, but there's this idea of like generative goods and network goods, where, you know, these creators can start making physical objects that are still kind of artistic or artisanal, and they have like this craftsmanship to it, but it does tie into NFTs and the blockchain in some way. And so again, like right now we're thinking of like, oh, an X copy of one of one. That's still going to be a huge part of the market, but I don't think that's the most interesting thing. I think, you know, we just started to scratch the surface on all the forms that a creator can take, just expressing their vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. Because it's almost like the one of one thing is the easiest one to understand. It's like Sam Spratt, instead of painting a literal oil painting, he makes what's effectively an incredibly detailed and wonderful digital oil painting. The only difference is that it's digital. The thing, he could make it physical, but it's more interesting to make it digital. So he makes it digital and it sells for 800K or however much like the Monument game sold for, right? That's like easy to understand. I like that you're talking about like, well, here's some stuff that might be harder to understand that is coming in the future, but it takes time for this stuff to kind of play out.
And by the way, that like that those one of ones are still going to be massive because there are ultra high net worth individuals, especially in crypto. Like think about how much money we're seeing that in Bitcoin right now. Like I had to like readjust everything I knew about like valuations when I started looking at ordinals just because of how much more they're valuing like things that on Ethereum, you know, would be like a fraction of the price. So there's a way more money in Bitcoin than I think anyone realizes. Yes. And if you're like a ultra high net worth individual, The thing you want the most is a thing that nobody else can have, which tends to be a one of one. If you have the one of one, you've essentially excluded every other human on earth from owning that thing. And that is like, that's the ultimate, right? That's the top of the ecosystem. And so there's still going to be a lot of money funneling into that. And so I'm not bearish on that market at all. It's just, relative to like the mass market scale of like gaming and, you know, dynamic on-chain experiences, That's also going to be huge and probably a lot bigger and touch a lot more humans than the one of one market.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm going to shout out our partner for today's show, Seedify, in just a second. Then I want to talk to you about some of the stuff that you emailed me, Curator, Meta, and affiliate fees. I'm very interesting to hear about that. But on the Bitcoin side, what people have to keep in mind is like, these are still the days before there's a spot ETF in the United States. These are the days before there's a spot ETF in every major country in the world. These are the days before Bitcoin's at a $1 trillion market cap. These are the days before Middle Eastern sovereign funds have fully aped in. And when you talk about like the price action that people aren't expecting with ordinals, my prediction is that, I don't know if it's right out the gate, but like call it within 1 year of what's the project? Taproot Wizards coming out on Ordinals, which I think a lot of people are probably viewing Taproot Wizards as like the consensus number one Ordinals collection once it comes out. Mm-hmm. I think that's a one Bitcoin floor, like out the gate. And when you think about how high that floor is, that's crazy, especially if it holds as Bitcoin appreciates in value, goes over 100K, over 150K. That's going to be pretty wild for people to understand. Because even myself, I looked it up and we had Machi Big Brother on this show in August. It's a great episode of the show. And at that time in August, Machi was buying so many Bored Apes still. He was just buying a bunch of NFTs at that time. And I remember being like, damn, man. I hope NFTs from a price action perspective return to where they were before. But if they don't, it's wild that he's buying all these Bored Apes. And now I view it as a foregone conclusion that not only will NFTs return to their previous all-time high price action, not every NFT, right? Not some random NFT you bought in 2021, but some NFTs returning to their all-time highs in terms of price action. It's just so wild to me because people have to factor in the underlying asset like a Bitcoin or an Ethereum. And when those things move up, the NFTs can move up with it. It gets to be pretty crazy, pretty illogical. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, real quick shout out to our partner for today's show, Seedify. Seedify Web3 Gaming Launchpad and Incubator is known for having the highest ROI launches in the industry. The community round starts today, so Seedify token holders are able to buy into Farcana's upcoming token, which is $FAR, until tomorrow. So to learn more about Seedify and keep up to date with their upcoming launches, you can follow them on X. That's at Seedify Fund. That's at SEEDIFYFUND, Seedify Fund on X. So Giancarlo, you proactively let me know that you wanted to talk about curator meta and affiliate fees. I think I have an idea of what this means, but what do you mean by that? And why do you think that this could be a big thing?
So if you look at Web2 and you follow like the affiliate marketing side of that, it just dominates as a form of marketing for just selling products online. In Web3, we basically have nothing like that. And there's a big problem where you have this mismatch between content creators and influencers and brands that have audiences and NFT creators that are trying to bring attention to their, you know, their tokens or their mints. And so there isn't right now an incentive program where they can come together and do like this win-win campaign outside of like kind of shady backroom deals. And, you know, you can do ethical sponsorships, but it's like a very limited part of the market. And so I've been watching like this small, it's still a very small part of the space, but there's evolution of creator affiliates where, you know, you can just get a link and, you know, like SoundMint has this and you send around that link, and then you get some rewards if somebody mints using your link. Pretty straightforward. But there's this other angle that is now like popping up and I think getting a lot bigger, which is this idea of fragmented minting or fragmented liquidity. And basically how this works is you can have a mint on a protocol like Zora, but then you can have a third-party platform point to that same mint. So they're hosting that mint on their platform as well. And it's sort of like first come, first serve. If they get a transaction for that mint on their platform, they end up getting a small fee from Zora. And this is all done on chain. And the fee is tiny. It's like a dollar. But that can scale pretty quickly, especially with free mints. You know, there could be a lot of volume there. And one of the platforms that really popularized this was Mint.Fun. You heard of Mint.Fun?
No.
They're just like a mint aggregator. And actually, like in the summer, they had about 40% market share of all the mints happening on Ethereum. Yeah. So it was like 4 out of 10 mint things that were minted on Ethereum was happening through Mint.Fun. And, you know, if it was from Zora, they would collect fees from that. And I'm seeing that same model pop up in other apps as well. So it's you can now mint things from Rainbow. You can now mint things from Floor, which is another mobile app.
Flooring protocol.
No, just Floor. It's just
right. It's like a wallet tracker. It tracks like your balance, etc.
And I think next year we're going to be seeing this happen a lot more. And we could get to a point where it's just like the default assumption that if there's a mint, you might just be able to mint that from anywhere, like your favorite app. And if you do so, that app is going to get some rewards. And then there are other tools like Reservoir, who's working with like DigiDaigaku on their contract. There are tools like Reservoir that are letting individual creators, making it easier for them to like spin up their own Mint.Fun or their own version of like a mint aggregator, and then have fees on there as well. And so I just think we're heading into this direction where like apps, but then also individuals might be able to just start like hosting mints through like this fragmented system, and then potentially getting fees through that, even being able to like add their own point systems on their own minting platforms for like loyalty programs. And this is just going to bring us a lot closer and maybe a better way of doing like attribution than like Web2 style, you know, links, URLs.
Well, the technology lends itself to be like the Web3 technology is inherently more advanced than Web2 technology. So it would lend itself to over time, you know, replacing the Web2 version and just being better. And having, you know, it's like some sort of on-chain ledger of all this. So if I'm understanding this correctly, would this be like, let's say an influencer like an Alex Hormozi, would he be able to like curate mints? Is that how you're envisioning this? Like, how would this relate to like a profile picture collection?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a hard one because he's not in NFTs at all, but let's say like Zeneca, who has like
sure.
a pretty defined niche. You kind of know the types of drops that he's into. He could have like essentially a Zeneca mint aggregator where, you know, he talks about drops, but then you can mint it through his page. And he could even incentivize that with like his own points program. So it's like if you mint through Zeneca's aggregator, you get Zeneca points. And that leads to like some other thing that he brings down the line. And then every time you mint through his platform, which by the way is the same price, you're not paying a higher or lower price on there, but he gets maybe a dollar, something small, I think eventually we'll get to the point where creators can set their own percentages. So, you know, maybe I don't think I'm going to get a lot of attention for my mint, so I can set it so that I'm giving up like 10% to whoever mints from their third party. And that encourages people to like put it on the front page. Like maybe now OpenSea is featuring your mint because on chain they're getting a higher percentage.
That's actually very interesting. I feel that then if someone's really good at curating mints, and if they curate like a hot mint and they have a big community, it can be very beneficial for both, because it's almost like it's a proper cosign of the mint by a trusted source. And so it raises awareness for the mint, and then it gets the trusted source something in return. Obviously, there can be layers of issues with this, but at the same time, in almost like a natural selection type of way, if you are promoting lousy projects just to make a buck, you will barbecue your reputation in a heartbeat.
Right.
And over time, people will figure out like, okay, Zeneca does a great job, but Easy doesn't, right? Easy's like really bad at curating mints. You know what I mean? Just kidding, Easy. But like, that's the example that I'm thinking about. Real quick, on the enforced royalty side, in relation to video games, Giancarlo, could you see a world where enforced royalties on, say, a video game that becomes popular that's on Solana could end up catching the attention of the mainstream because of how substantial the royalties are? For example, last week, when you know we had our big Sunday two Sundays ago, when Gordon Gonner, co-founder of Bored Ape Yacht Club, bought a Bodago and he tweeted about it, and it led to, as you can imagine, quite a few Bodago sales afterwards because a lot of attention was on the collection. Because Bodago's is on Solana and has enforced royalties, we were a top five royalty revenue company in NFTs last week. Like for the whole week out of everybody.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. Dude. It was I'm not even saying that to flex. I'm just saying like.
Oh, no, we're flexing.
Flex. Bro, it's the last day of the year. We're all going to be celebrating this weekend. If you're not going to flex now, then when are you going to flex? The only people watching NFT content at this point are kind of sickos. So I'm
sure they're open to it. A little flex for the sickos. But anyway, so as you can imagine, that was a very significant week for our business this year. It was an awesome way to close the year. Yeah. It led to us having to have conversations with our accountant and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But anyway, the point is, if let's say like we know Shrapnel, right? Shrapnel is a partner of the show. If Shrapnel becomes like a really popular game or some game that comes out on Seedify becomes a really popular game with enforced royalties and crazy high trading volume, that's a revenue channel that traditional games have never really experienced. Obviously, traditional games have been like, you know, fat and happy for a long time. They charge $80 a game and all these kids pay it and they make literally billions of dollars. But I don't know. Is that something that you're thinking about, that royalties could be super duper significant for the gaming side of NFTs?
Absolutely. So there's this presentation, I think, at the Polkadot conference by John Linden, who's a CEO of Mythical Games, who I think is actually like by far and away the leading Web3 gaming company. If you look at like, you know, they have the NFL Rivals game and they just get like these crazy licenses and they're releasing mobile games. And they're just like in conversations with like Apple and Android directly. But in this presentation, he talks about this analysis they did on royalties inside of their app. And I hope I'm getting these numbers right, but he said for every $1 that people spent buying like a primary mint in their app, they made another $4 from the royalties on the secondary volume. And that's just money that wouldn't exist in a normal Web2 app.
Damn.
So that is a crazy jump when you have, and they have like this enforced royalties system, I'm pretty sure. And so that's a crazy
jump. I just want to comment on that real quick. It is an enforced royalty because I've played Rivals. I've spent money on Rivals. It's an extremely addictive loop. But what they do really well with the secondary market is anytime you have a card that's worth more than you paid, they just email blast the ever-living hell out of you. You get like 20 emails about this thing that's like, hey, you have a rare card. It's selling for this much. Go check out the marketplace. And they really drive user engagement. You get push notifications from the app that are that's telling you that this card is worth money. So it really it gets in your head that like, oh shit, I have something that's worth something. And then they just don't make it easy to get that money off the platform. So you end up reinvesting that money that you made anyway into more stuff. It's like an endless loop. They crush it, to be honest.
Yeah. And so they're going to do a better job at it than I guess most people. But yeah, I think examples like that are going to wake people up to the business model here is on another level. And gaming especially because, like you said, you can get caught in this like addictive loop. I think it's going to be a lot stronger than like PFPs or anything else that we've been dealing with.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here for some predictions, Giancarlo. No, very few humans have watched the NFT space closer than you have for what is now effectively literally 3 years, pretty much nonstop, 3 years in the making since the launch of the Giancarlo Buys Tokens YouTube channel. And Giancarlo, you were a digital asset analyst before NFTs. Am I right about that?
I was a gaming analyst, a sell side researcher for gaming stocks, and so yeah, because gaming stocks were like at the time that I came in, they ended up being like 90% digital transactions, people buying loot boxes and Fortnite skins. And then essentially I had to like analyze what they were selling.
So like Roblox and companies like that?
Yeah.
Very interesting. So like very few people have the depth that you do when it comes to digital assets and NFTs. So if we were doing this 1 year ago and I said, what would be your prediction for like, you know, a hot take of something that you can expect next year in NFTs, the correct answer would have been ordinals, right? Mm-hmm. We already talked about that as like this crazy thing, layer one Bitcoin on-chain NFTs, pretty crazy stuff. If you had to make a prediction for 2024, what would it be?
For just like the big thing that we're talking about?
Yes.
So I mentioned enforcement of royalties. That's going to just like bring energy back to every single genre. But one specific genre, and this could be a hot take, but I do think it'll be a surprise, like upside genre. It's what I mentioned earlier, networked goods. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen a little bit about this, you know, G-Money, 990cc, Pudgy Penguins is kind of, you know, network goods. I bought a chair a few months ago. It was a generative algorithmically generated chair, which I thought was a really cool idea. But there's like two angles that this could take. It could be generative goods, which is like what Tyler Hobbs is trying to do, where they use like a classic generative mint, but they apply that to a physical object and they sort of like small batch these things and you get like a unique item. And then there's like more of these traditional goods that have some kind of embedded chip in them. And so you could think of like 90cc or like WeBox, you know, they're going to be selling action figures that are like chip enabled. And you know, there's this company, IYK, I think it is, that does a lot of this. And so this to me is like a big deal because no matter how we change the meta for these NFTs, if they remain digital only, I think there's a percentage of people who are just not going to click with that. For at least like the short term, like over the long term, I think everyone does. But, you know, on like a 2-3 year scale, they're just not going to understand it. And there's always going to be this like aura of skepticism around that because it doesn't feel real. But when you create something tangible and still retain like the stuff that we like, so it's still a composable NFT tied to it on a decentralized immutable blockchain, all of that, then I think that's just like the best of both worlds. And I think next year we'll see some surprise. Like the Solana phone's another recent example, right? Like now there's a physical artifact that is it's receiving airdrops. And I think that could end up being like this crazy collectible. And so just a tangible side of things, which from like the speculative standpoint, maybe is not as exciting for like traders because that it's harder to trade around physical things. But from like the idea of bringing people into the space, I think that has a stronger chance than another kind of art or, you know, these games that are like on-chain games that have like 100 people playing them. I think those are cool for people who are in the space, but in terms of like what's going to bring newcomers, the idea of like a physical object created by like a brand name creator, you have a unique version of that. And it also can be like leveled up and unlocks things online. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Very interesting stuff. Signal has a question about gaming. And then after that, I have a few more prediction things for 2024. But Signal, please.
Yeah, no. On that bit about generative goods, I completely agree with you. I saw the Tyler Hobbs generative tattoo. And I thought that was such a cool way of bringing in people who love tattoos and bringing in art and then essentially merging those two worlds together. I don't have any tattoos simply because I've never seen one where I was like, that is something that I'd want. But seeing your favorite artist and then a one-of-one tattoo being brought together, I thought, yeah, the generative art tattoo IRL tangible would be an amazing way of bringing new people in the space. But I wanted to ask, because of your background coming from gaming, what games have you seen in the space that you think will be able to capture the attention of people who are not in the space right now, but if you show them that game, you'd be like, this is worth playing?
I think Parallel is really the only one so far that has like created this kind of gameplay that you can see people who play that genre actually like getting into. So that's the only one off the top of my head. One that's like still in development, but the founder, I really like the way he thinks about it, is Castaway, which I think was a lot bigger last year. But you know, they're creating this like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's almost the guy who made it used to be like a Minecraft like custom modder.
Is that the Raft thing?
It was on
free NFT. It was like one of the first free NFT launches that wasn't directly affiliated with Gabe and Igor themselves. It was like a third party.
Got it.
The reason why it's hard to figure out just from looking at like early clips is because the games that win are going to be the ones that can win over the whales, which is the 0.1% of the gaming population. And so when I look at these game clips, I'm not asking myself, like, do I see my normie cousin talking about this as much? But like, are they going to be able to steal away whales from similar games within that genre? And that's very hard to predict just from looking at like very early clips. It has to do a lot with like the in-game economy and the game loops and things that you really need to just like spend time with. And even if you're not a whale, it might even be hard for you to be able to predict that because you're just not the target audience. Like all of these, and this is why I like the Castaways one, because he talks a lot about this. Like if you win the whales, you win the war, basically. That's what drives the gaming industry. And that's what will get these like big publishers to start caring about the space. It's not going to be like if you're able to capture like the, you know, far off normie Kotaku reader who already hates NFTs. And so like that's sort of the angle that I look at things from. I'm less excited about like a lot of these games tend to be like shooters. I don't know why. That's like the hardest genre to get into. Like you're really going to compete with Fortnite and Call of Duty. So I don't see as I don't get excited about those, but more of these like niche genres that we know have like these crazy just like whale populations already, but maybe aren't as like mainstream.
I mean, I love the level of detail. Go ahead, Sig.
No, I was gonna ask, so I'm just curious on the other side, from the game clips that you've seen, do you think they have the potential to capture the whale market, considering we've seen more footage from them than perhaps other games in the space?
I haven't seen anything that looks fun, to be honest, personally.
The ape running around?
Huh?
The ape running around isn't fun?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what's there. It's like sort of this like early 2000s open world genre that I don't think is as interesting right now. You know, they already have some whales. I mean, they have the Bored Ape community. I wonder how many of those are like gamers versus just like people who bought these things as like flex assets. Dookie Dash was probably the best thing they did, and I think they should do more of that, where it's like these one-off on-chain events that bring a lot of hype, get a lot of attention, and then just like goes away, as opposed to like trying to build this like forever eternally online just like open world that is super complex, has a very good chance of not working out, and you just put all your eggs into that one basket. I think their best strength is just marketing and just hyping the shit out of like a single thing that's like a one-time event, and they should just do more of that.
Well, have you seen what Pixelmon's doing? Because that's something that's really interesting to me, is they keep doing these one-off like short form games. They did like a Flappy Bird clone. They have another one dropping. And to me, that's really interesting because they just keep throwing like a 10K prize pool on it, which is going to make people want to play and at least try it out, which then increases daily active user numbers, gets them information about users, play times, etc., as they work towards a larger game. And I think that's like probably the best way to do it right now, because game development takes years, like literally multiple years. I'm not talking a couple, but like 3 to 5 on the low side, 10 on the large side to get anything of quality out the door. And to me, that's where like you just hit the nail on the head. Because if you remember, Yuga did that game too, where they finally just delivered that like 2001 Honda Civic to that person after the Bored Ape versus Mutant Ape like sewer fighting game. And that had a ton of buzz around it. Dookie Dash had a ton of buzz. But then they kind of lost the plot with Legends of Mara because it just got way too complicated. Like Dookie Dash was easy. It was like, don't die. That was it.
And it's just like this high stakes thing. Like everyone was fighting over one item that ended up being like $1 million. Like we just need a lot more of that. Like, I don't know why that worked so well and got so much attention. And then it just, we just didn't see any more of it or saw like other brands trying to copy it. I think they're looking at the traditional games market a little too hard and just trying to replicate that. But that, like having a series of discrete one-time limited events with like high stakes, I think is an awesome thing. You know, do you remember the hamsters? Like those were so much fun, dude.
That was like the most fun I've had at the entire bear, because there was that one little hamster that was like 0-86.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, truthfully, I bet on him a lot. I just wanted him. I wanted him to revert to the mean, and he just never did. Just continued to lose.
But like,
and
is that not the biggest sign? Like, you took the weirdest fucking idea. Hamsters, you know, racing, watching this with crypto bros, and it worked. I mean, until it didn't. But that idea just tells me that there's this demand for live social high stakes events that you can only do on chain. You can't do this with traditional games.
Well, the hamster thing was traditional gambling, and that's why I liked it. Because it's, you're not trying to I didn't participate. I never like did it. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, I like that because it's traditional gambling. So you're not trying to reinvent the wheel. And we have crypto's had a ton of reinvent the wheel moments, but not that many. Keep it super duper simple and just get people to want to do it. What was the end result of the hamsters? Did the people that started it just rug pull it? What was the end result of the hamsters?
Wasn't it fake in the end?
No, it was fake. Then they proved it wasn't fake. So that was the whole issue, was like they thought it was fake. And then they were like, no, it's not fake. Here's proof that these hamsters are actually alive and we're not running a camera loop. The guy like filmed himself going to a Petco and buying more hamsters, which is like pretty crazy. So like they had a bunch of that stuff. But I think the end result, truthfully, was it just like lost steam. Like the token price went down, which a lot of people were like hyped about. And when the token dies off, interest kind of wanes. And then there was some drama with like a dev taking money, which led to like an implosion of it all per usual.
So as is tradition.
Yeah, as it is every time.
I mean, it's possible to do the hamster racing and not steal the money, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just saying, like, it's possible for some talented builder out there to go make this in a way that actually is above board in some country like Dubai or something. I know a bunch of you are in Dubai, so I don't want to hear it. I know a bunch of you are in Dubai. And just don't steal the money and don't fake it. Like, actually do it for real. Crazy idea. Anyway, Giancarlo, before we let you go, you run MinterSkip. MinterSkip ranks some of the most, you know, highly anticipated upcoming NFT projects. I recommend anybody check it out. You can subscribe at, is it MinterSkip.com?
Yeah, you can go there.
MinterSkip.com. It's at Mint or Skip, MinterSkip on Twitter. Doing very well there, I see. And so I'm going to ask you, are you cool if I give you groups of three projects? Can you pick who, like, are you cool with picking who you think is the winner for 2024?
Sure.
All right. So first one, Moonbirds Azuki Doodles, the three you brought up earlier. Who's the winner for 2024?
Azuki.
I figured you'd say that. You had an Azuki before.
I had an Azuki. I bought Elementals. I've been riding this shit down since the beginning. but I do think they still have a smaller now than last year, but they still have a cult following. They still have a niche that is like one. It could be, you know, anime is huge, and I don't see anybody competing with them there. Even though they've taken a lot of shots, there's been like a million of them, and so they have like this lane that they dominate. And so yeah, I think they could turn it around.
Easy.
So Azuki,
Moonbirds, Doodles.
Dude, that's hard. That's really difficult. Cause I don't. Yeah, damn, dude, you're asking some banging questions today. I'm gonna go Doodles.
I'm gonna go Doodles.
Yeah, call me crazy. Just restructured the org, moved Poopy to an advisory role. Evan is stepping away for a leave of absence due to illness, which opens up a lot of opportunity. Like, we have to remember, they still own Golden Wolf. I think, is that what the name of the animation
studio? The animation studio, yeah.
And that's really interesting to me. Like, that is really,
that was a good buy.
Absolute home run of a buy, peak bear market too. So you know they got a damn good evaluation on that. I've only heard positives from the camp store. And to me, that's like a good sign. And I was just at a store down here in Miami and I saw the Doodle figurines like right next to some cost stuff, some bear bricks, et cetera. And I was like, these actually look good. And that to me was like, okay. So maybe with some the right leadership, I think that they can really turn it around.
Nobody ever said Burnt Toast art was whack. Signal.
Was anyone left to pick? I have to pick Moonbirds.
you picked the same thing as one of them. It doesn't matter.
I think just I'm going to go with Azuki. They just, that community is just like, don't underestimate it. I think what they managed to pull off, 40 million mint peak bear, just goes to show, like, you know, when he comes to town, like, the mice run. So it has to be Azuki. Has to.
All right. A couple more. So Giancarlo, Mad Lads, Pudgy Penguins, Digidaigaku.
Pudgy Penguins. I think that one. That one's easy.
Wow.
Just they're furthest that along. One's easy. They're furthest along in executing their vision.
All right. Everyone says Pudgy Penguins?
Yeah, it's Pudgy.
Pudgies.
All right. My bad. That was a bad one. That wasn't as good as the other one.
Dude, you're 2 for 3. We'll take it, but not bad and perfect here.
That was trash. All right. And my bad, guys. All right. Next one. D-Gods, Mutant Ape Yacht Club, Captains.
Damn. Captains. Going Captains.
You're like, influencing Giancarlo's decision.
What's the time frame here? What's the time frame here?
2024.
Oh, in 2024?
Like, you got to hold this for a
and
year.
And it's also, like, are we talking about upside relative to current floor price?
Yeah, like, which one's the best buy out of the three right now? Which, if you, Crystal Ball, which one are you going to want to buy?
So what was it? Captains, D-Gods, and what?
And Captains, D-Gods.
Mutant Ape Yacht Club.
Mutant Ape Yacht Club.
I will go D-Gods.
Wow.
I think upside relative to where they're at now is probably the highest. Captains is pretty expensive still, isn't it?
I think so, because they still have a pretty heavy unlock is the big thing.
It was what?
I said, I think Captains are still relatively high. Yeah, they're still 4.2.
4.4, D-Gods are 3.3, and Mutant Apes is the most expensive one out of all of them, 5.36.
Yeah, and it's just Frank is my argument. I have nothing really.
Pretty good argument.
I'm gonna go Easy captains.
Captains.
Yeah, I'm going captains. Says captains. Don't fade Ray. He knows what he's doing. Quietly.
Okay.
Quiet killer.
I love it. One more. And Giancarlo, have no bias here. Forget that you're on this show. Doesn't matter that you're on this show. What Who cares? Who cares? Bodagos, Clanosaurs, Can Pie Pandas.
Bodagos, 100%. 100%.
Are you being serious?
I'm serious.
Let's go, Giancarlo.
Attention is the name of the game, and you guys have an amazing grab and attention and a great content format. And I think when the NFT space turns around, this thing is going to be a rocket ship.
Well, appreciate that, dude. And I'm not putting a gun to your head to say that, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, look, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you check out Mint or Skip, mintorskip.com, mintorskip.com. You can subscribe to the newsletter. I'm a subscriber, have been since it launched. Hey. It's sick. It's dope. At Mint or Skip on Twitter. And of course, the Giancarlo Buys Tokens YouTube channel, over 100,000 subscribers, ladies and gentlemen, the largest NFT YouTube channel out there. Anywhere else we should send them, Giancarlo?
That's it. Follow me on Twitter too.
Follow him on Twitter at Giancarlo on X platform. Is it show?
Show. Show.
Show.
Yeah.
You should make a Giancarlo show.
I know. I came up with that when I was like 8 years old. I was like, the Giancarlo show. But no, never did it.
I love it. And ladies and gentlemen, one more shout out to Seedify, today's show partner. Seedify is a Web3 gaming launchpad and incubator known for having the highest ROI launches in the industry. Their community round starts today with Seedify token holders being able to buy into Farcana's upcoming token, that is $FAR, until tomorrow. So to learn more about Seedify and keep up to date with their upcoming launches, you can follow them on X at Seedify Fund, at SEEDIFYFUND. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will be back tomorrow to close out this short week. We run the show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time each and every week. Have been doing it for over 2 years at this point.